In this episode, we unpack how Justice went from zero to 25 fully booked weddings in the last year. There's a little bit of secret sauce in there, and it's so simple, yet so many people are not taking advantage of this. This is the reason I knew right away that she would be my wedding photographer. Thank you, Inspire Business Community, for partnering with us for this season on the Silo Podcast. Creatives, if you need a spot to work with other people, brainstorm, or have an office, Inspire's got you covered. We can't thank you enough for letting us host the podcast in your space. So beautiful, and it made for a perfect backdrop. Let's get into the episode.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to the Silo Podcast. I've got Justice on today. It's so cool that I can have my wedding photographer on a podcast and kind of help unravel some mysteries behind wedding photography and what makes Justice so special and why I chose her. This whole podcast is just going to explain why Justice is an awesome person. You actually just started full-time wedding photography.
Yeah, I did. So I've had my business for a year and a half up to this point.
Justice Faith Photo, right?
Yes, Justice Faith Photo. I've had my business for a year and a half. And before that, I was working at a nonprofit, and I was doing their like social media marketing, like photography, all that stuff. So I was doing that part time. Well, I guess even before that, I was nannying and doing that and had my business. So when I first started, I had like three jobs. It was pretty insane. And then I was able to cut back on nannying and then go kind of like half and half, split my time 50-50 at the nonprofit in between my business. And then just a few months ago in May, I was at a point in my business where I could go full time. So
that's
wild.
Yeah. How did that like... Was that a passion switch for you? Was that like a growing into a calling thing for you?
I would say it was definitely a growing into a calling thing. I think when I started my business, I didn't really know exactly where I wanted it to go. And then as I just, you know, as it grew and as I realized that it was like actually like, wow, I want to do this. Like, this is a passion. I think I was just like, it just makes sense to go full time. And yeah, I wanted to book 10 weddings in my first year, and I booked 25.
Come on.
So I was like, once I like started to crunch the numbers, I was like, oh, okay, this would make sense to just do this. Just jump, like kind of, it felt like diving off of a cliff, like diving headfirst, like just taking the leap and seeing where it goes. But also the numbers are there. So I probably won't break my neck, but we'll see. But yeah.
Wow. 25. I didn't even know that, I don't think, but that's insane. Like, what was your portfolio leading up to that point? Because were you dabbling in all sorts of stuff and found the niche in wedding?
Yeah, that's, I would say probably a little bit of both. I second shot a lot. So like I had wedding coverage, but honestly, like it was the Lord. Because the Lord told me when to start my business and how to start it. Like I call him like my CEO, and I just like anytime I have a question, I'm like, okay, God, like what do I do? Like, yeah. I don't know what I'm doing. What do I do? And so like he told me when to start. And then like as soon as I did, like five of my friends got engaged. So that was like the perfect in. So like I shot all of their engagements and all of their weddings. And that was like what started my business. Like I'd literally tell my friends, like, thanks to you, like I am like, you helped me start my business. Like I credit this to you. So yeah, it was just timing and the Lord.
Straight off the ground, five like weddings. You're just like, okay, something's happening. Something's happening. That's so wild. That blew my mind right there. We can just stop the podcast now. Like, dang. Where do you find yourself like in the editing style? Is that bright and airy? Like I chose you because you are natural tones kind of feel, but how do you describe yourself then?
I describe myself as, I like to use the word timeless. And the way I kind of came to that word and that descriptor was like looking through my parents' old wedding photos. And it was like, this is something, like this was 40 years ago, but I look at this and I'm like, that's a good photo. And when I first started, I was not like, I wouldn't like timeless, bright and airy, like just like, I like to edit my photos the way that your eye would see it. So when I first started, I was definitely more like really warm toned and really grainy and like that, because I thought that was cool. And then the more I got into it, I was like, no, actually, like I want to pursue that like timeless look where in 40, 50, 80, 100 years, like people are gonna look at that and be like, oh, this is a cool photo. Not like, what the heck? Why is this orange? This doesn't make any sense. So yeah, I would say definitely like that timeless look, but then also like I love to get creative and like use motion blur a lot and utilize like major cropping a lot and like playing with shadows and like harsh contrast and light. Light is my favorite thing. So like it's very much so like I feel like it's two ends of the spectrum. Like one is like very creative and artistic, and the other is like this is the way your eye would see it, and like this is like straight out of like this is the way my eye would see it. So it's like both. So I like to mesh those together.
Right. Do you feel like you avoid trends then, or is timeless in trend right now, or where do you place yourself maybe on a continuum?
That's a good question. I would say timeless is definitely in trend right now.
Yeah.
But it's not going to go out of trend either.
Right. That's so, the key point, I feel like. The nitty-gritties of it is that you shoot weddings. What kind of gear do you have that support that kind of production? Because that's not, like, people just think, oh, I'll show up with a camera. You have, like, a harness and stuff, right?
Don't you? Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, I've got two camera bodies. I've got two different lenses. So I have both bodies on me.
What are they?
Right now I have Mark IVs. I have a 35 and an 85. So 35 isn't quite what your eyes see. It's a little bit closer, but I like to like, that's like my, this is what my eyes see. Like this is how I capture it. And then my 85 is obviously more micro and zoomed in just a little bit more. The background's more blurred, which creates a more cinematic look. So I love to have both of those on me because then I'm able to capture like, okay, this is the moment as it happened, like shoot with a wider aperture. And then this is like, I use my 85 if I'm getting more creative or also during ceremonies, like that way I'm not right up in people's faces. So two camera bodies, both lenses.
You're slinging them like Western, right?
I know,
like,
yes. Uh-huh. You should see me try to squat on a wedding day. It's like terrible. It's like almost that like practice for when I'm pregnant. Like I feel like that's the same. It's like, it's really, yeah, difficult. But anyway, so I have both of those and I've got harnesses. And then obviously, yeah, I mean, I have two flashes, extra batteries for the flashes. I have all of my cards, chapstick, gum.
Yeah, what are some wedding essentials?
Snacks, water. Like usually I have two water bottles on me. Yeah, ponytails, safety pins, like all the little things. But most importantly is.
Yeah, and what does that like backup process look like? Because you have 25 weddings in your first year, that's a lot of storage too.
Yes. So for me, I usually bring my laptop to the wedding day itself so that during the reception, I am able to like, okay, well, first of all, I shoot on two cards. So every photo I take is automatically in two spots. And then I will start to back up the photos either during the reception or on my way home. I buckle my laptop into my passenger seat and start to upload those. So I upload them to one hard drive. And then the night of the wedding, like all, I usually between 4 to 5 cards, unless I have a second shooter, sometimes it's more, but like 5 to 6 cards worth of storage, like, and I use 64 gigs. So that's like a lot of photos. So those are all uploaded once. And then before I go to bed, I plug in a second hard drive. And so then they're uploaded to a second spot. So then ultimately they're in 4 places, 2 hard drives, 2 cards. I keep a copy of those cards on my desk in a little, weatherproof box. So yeah, your photos are backed up in 4 different spots by the time the process is done. And then I don't even format my cards until like the wedding is delivered plus a little bit. And then I also I create a new catalog in Lightroom for each shoot. So like if I need to go back and make any edits, like I have that catalog. If something crazy were to happen, like I still have like the hard copy on the card itself. So yeah.
So I do one catalog per wedding as well. And so that's really interesting because I hear people that have a master catalog and I'm like, I feel like that is so scary. One, sure, you can probably back up your catalog multiple times or just have it redundantly, but like to have all is one like yeah. Little scary.
And also just like organizationally, I don't know how that works. And like I have a friend who's also a wedding photographer, and she had she delivered a gallery and then like deleted the photos from the catalog, and then the client like wanted a photo in black and white or something, like, and she was like, there was like a bra strap showing and the client wanted that removed. So my friend had to like go through her card, like replug her SD card into, and like it was this whole thing. It was like, yeah, this is why I have extra. And then I'll also back up that catalog on the second hard drive as well. So the catalog's also in two different places, but yeah.
Yeah. Do you run with presets in Lightroom if we're just going to get into the full thing? I mean, I'm sure you've found your look and then have from there made presets from it, but what does that look like?
Yeah, I use presets. The KT Mary is, she's incredible. She's like top luxury destination photographer. She's amazing. So I use her for a lot of my base presets. And obviously, like you said, I've tweaked it. And then also, I'm blanking on his name, Mark. I think he pronounces his last name Deleon, Mark Deleon. He's like queen of, or I guess prince of, whatever, but king of like cinematic photography. And so his presets are more like warm and like, he calls them like rom-com, like very like cinematic, like it looks like a movie. So I'll bounce back between the two of those, but yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, I haven't experimented enough with other people's presets to like find that. So that's interesting that like, it's really good that you found inspiration from other people. And I'm all for presets too. I think a lot of people are like, no, find your own look, or like, ooh, you paid for that. Right. So to be on the winning end of just what you got to do to find your look. Yeah, exactly. What are some wedding mistakes or things that have just caused you a lot of stress in the game? Because you've experienced enough by now full time that like, I'm sure your eye twitches if the mother or the bride walks down and calls you out or something.
Yes. Okay, something that day of, I think, it stresses me out if like I don't have enough time on a wedding day to capture everything that wants to be captured. So like if I'm like, I guess, rushed for time, that like stresses me out so much. So I've learned to always have an assistant with me. So I only have a second shooter unless like the couple specifically requested that, or if like I would recommend it to the couple dependent on like the situation in their wedding day. But I've learned to always have an assistant with me to like help me with everything. Like she'll get behind the scenes for me and she'll like be a runner. Yeah, like super helpful.
So to prevent from those terrible things to happen during like the actual day, you have a pretty robust like client experience that I've been a part of, luckily, which is super cool. But you walk me through how you would stop that from happening, from you being rushed. Like you meet with people regularly to try to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Yeah. So a huge part of the process is like client meetings leading up to the wedding day itself. I follow the 2-2-2 rule. 2 months, we'll have a timeline meeting, 2 months before your wedding day, 2 weeks before your wedding day, and then 2 days if necessary. Usually we don't end up doing that one because we're just good. But that first 2 months before your wedding day, we will go over like all, basically I tell the client, like, tell me what your vision is. Like, tell me how you want your guests to feel, how you want to feel, and then also like what skeleton pieces you have of your wedding day already. Because a lot of time that's all they know. And they're like, actually, I really need this meeting because now I need, like, I don't know, like, what time, like, I need your input. So we start with like what the client knows. So that's like what time the ceremony is starting, what time they want reception to start, and what time they want to leave by. And then from there, I go in and like fill in all the blanks, talk about like, okay, well, what are you guys doing first look? Are you not? If you're not, what are your, like, what are you doing? And then like, just going over like we start like with the ceremony and then go through like, okay, what happens after the ceremony? This is the typical flow. Do you like that? Do you want to do something different? It's been really popular. A lot of my clients want to do like a photo with like each of their guests, or like at least each group of guests, which has been really fun, but that requires like planning. So it's like, so I can't stress
getting
enough
how important. Getting that full list. Of, uh-huh. Yeah.
Yes. So important. But yeah. And then we'll go through and fill in like the first half of the day. Like I call it, there's like three acts to the wedding day, three chapters. So yeah, basically we go in, fill the details, and then I send that to them. And then I tell them like, listen, you can retweak this as many times as you want till it's perfect. And then we, you know, the second meeting is like, okay, this is the finalized plan. How are you guys feeling? How does this feel to you now that we're 2 weeks out? Like, does this still, like, is this a good fit? Do you want to make any changes? Has anything changed? That sort of thing. So just like clear communication is so important, and it like helps prevent those hiccups because, yeah, you know. But then also sometimes, like I had a wedding last weekend where it was actually really funny because they were doing the cake cutting, and then they had her maid of honor and her his best man up with them, and then the maid of honor was asking me like, what do I do? And I was like, I don't think you need to be up here. Like, you can go. Because I was like, this is awkward. Like, you shouldn't be up here. And the bride was like, no, I want her to stay. And I was like, oh, okay. Oh, perfect. Like, you stay right there. I was like, at least come to this side. And the bride was like, no, she needs to be here. And I was like, okay, like, perfect. Sarah, I want you to just smile at her. And I was like, I don't know what's happening, but this is what the bride wants. And then basically, instead of the bride and groom putting cake on their face, they turned and put it on their people's face, which was funny, but I had no clue. So it's like, sometimes you won't know, and you just have to be like willing to roll with the punches. And but then everything that you can prepare for, do your best to prepare for.
Right.
But, yeah.
Because as a client, I'm like myself, I'm like, there's no like outline to how you're supposed to plan your wedding. Like, sure, there are like timelines that you should be hitting of like maybe 6 weeks or 6 months out, you should be either starting or like really in the motion of it. Luckily, or hopefully a lot further along, like booking your people. But with my case where we got engaged in February, we had a quick turnaround on like hiring our vendors and stuff like that. So you really have to crunch down your own wedding planning timeline to match your needs. So for me, I'm like running all over the place trying to figure that out. So it's super helpful as a photographer or any vendor to just be like, hey, are you communicating with these other people as well? Hey, I need to be in touch with like all my other people that I'm going to be doing this huge day with, and hopefully, you know, succeeding in doing all of that together. Because a photographer wears more than just one hat throughout the whole planning process. But I feel like especially wedding photographers, photographers day of, like, are wearing so many more hats than other vendors at the wedding. Like the DJ isn't the one that's helping the couple along with their like that timeline of the day.
And you're ultimately like a friend. I'm with the couple, and even like sometimes I'm with the bride more than the groom is with the bride. Like I'm with them more, like, so you become really a friend by the end of the day.
And that speaks into relationships as well, which is super pivotal to your, like your whole brand is like super in, these couples are my priority. Like, can you speak to that?
Yeah. I mean, I think relationship, like I'm a people person. So I just like, I love it. If the client ultimately doesn't feel comfortable with me and comfortable with who I am, then like I failed. Like, it's not that extreme, but like that's like speaks to like how important relationship is with me. So I spend time like getting to know them, getting to know their vision for their day, and then making sure that they're comfortable like with me. And yeah, I think because like ultimately, like I said, like I am with them more than anyone else on their wedding day. And a lot of people don't think about that because it's like, oh, well, they're just a vendor. And like maybe other photographers are like that. But I'm like, no, like I'm taking your photos and making sure like your hair is in place and so that, you know, you look good. But more so I'm like, hey, you look awesome today. And I'm like able to encourage them. Like, how are you feeling? Like, do you need anything? Can I go get you a drink of water? Like, do you want to move into this? Like, we have this, you know, first look scheduled to happen in 5 minutes. Like, are you feeling okay? Do you want to do that? Do you want to wait a minute? And it's like, because on your wedding day, and I've like worked with other photographers. That's why second shooting is so important when you're starting out, because I work with other photographers where I'm like, oh, I don't love the way that you just handled that. And then so like you see from others' mistakes and you learn. And yeah, one of the things that I learned was like, just if you prioritize how your client feels like on a wedding day, like that's more important than good photos. Like photos are important and I will deliver good photos, but like more so, like I'm going to make sure like that you're doing okay and that you're doing good. And I don't want to ever rush you and ever want to pause a moment. And so, yeah, building relationship. And then they're more comfortable with you. They're more comfortable in front of the camera, which means they're going to like the photos more. They're not going to be stiff and rigid. And yeah, it really, relationship like totally affects their experience.
Trust is just so key in business in general, but like you have that competitive advantage of like making people come at ease and just like loose and ready to do this thing and hyping us up in general. But like you just, that competitive advantage is so, so important. And you're right, not all photographers do that. There's more transactional photographers. There's more people that are like, hey, I'm just in this for the money. Like, but you're in it for the people. And like, that's so admirable. Because that's how you're going to get 25 weddings your first year. Like, it's not something you do. Well, one, it's just a blessing. But two, you don't get that if you're just saying, here's the money, here's the photos. Tell me a little bit more about, like, another competitive advantage you think you have. Like, what is your edge on the other people at Bragg right now?
Yeah.
In front of me.
That's
what,
okay.
That's what I tell Gavin, and he needs to brag sometimes. I'm like, Gavin, I need you right now. Brag to me for a minute about something. So I want to hear you brag. What have you been the best at?
Oh, I would say making clients comfortable in front of the camera. Because I get a lot of my inquiries are like, we've never been in front of the camera before. We're a little nervous. We don't know what to do. And honestly, like my response to that first thing that email says is like, you're speaking my language. Like, that's okay. Like, that is where I'm able to do my best work. Because prioritizing relationship, like, it, especially if I don't know the couple and if they said that they're not comfortable in front of the camera, like I will either meet with them, like say, hey, let's get coffee before your shoot, or let's like schedule a call before your engagement shoot, just so like to build that relationship. And because then, yeah, they're going to be more comfortable with you. And so I'd say, yeah, I'm able to make people feel comfortable in front of the camera by spending time with them. Like also like finding, because when you observe people, like you can really see their insecurities, but also like you can see their beauty. So then I like in meeting with people beforehand, I'm like, okay, I think I can kind of get where your insecurities may be. And I think I can kind of get, or like, and I can see that this is, you know, beautiful about you, or this is so cool about you. And so then I'm able to like be aware of the insecurities, but then also highlight like the beauty. And I'm able to like do that in how I'm directing them and how I'm posing them, but also like how I'm communicating and talking to them.
It was big that you mentioned like how you communicate with them, because you are a very good listener. And from those interactions, being able to word it correctly, I remember something that we've talked about before of like even the smallest like wrong say on a photographer's end can completely bring those insecurities to the surface, and then they're stiff, and then you have to work them back
down. Break down all of those walls.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Verbiage and like how you talk to them is huge. And like, yeah, just, yeah, really watching, you know, how you're communicating with them, how you're saying, like, you know, I could have a client in a pose and I'm like, okay, in my head, I'm like, this really is not working. But like, I'm never going to say that. I'm going to say, oh my gosh, you guys look so good. You look great. Now let's try this. And then, you know, just like being very careful with your verbiage, but also like always hyping them up. And yeah.
What would your advice be to someone that's just starting out getting into like portraits, I would say, before they would get into weddings, but they're going on a session for the first time? The photographer is just as nervous as the couple. How do you find that nerve to come down for both of them? I mean, it would help probably to meet with the couple in person to start, but.
Yeah. And I would say like, ask some questions, like have conversations. Like, don't feel like you need to be, if they booked you for an hour session, don't feel like you need to be shooting for the entire hour. Like, you can take good photos in like, and get all you need in 30 minutes. Like, obviously the client doesn't know that, but you know that you could be like 30 minutes in, you're like, okay, I got everything that I need. And then, so just like take time, like if you're going in between locations or an outfit change, or even you're just like, okay, let's take a break. Let's take a little breather. And you said you do this for a living. Like, tell me more about that. Or how did you get into that? Or like, if they're a senior and they're graduating, like, what are your future plans? And like, there's always something that you can ask them about to get them to talk about themselves, because then they feel seen. And when they feel seen, they're going to open up to you and your camera in a different way. So like, not being afraid to like pause and like not take any photos and like talk to them. And because also like, you could be 30 minutes in and be like, I have no more poses to do. And then, so just pod, like that helps like eat some of the time too. I know definitely when I started, I was like, okay, I like don't know what else to do. And so if you just like slow down the whole process, like when you first meet with them, like say you're in a field and you're about to start, you're like, I take like 5-10 minutes and like talk to the client and see like, how are you doing? How's your day? Tell me more about this. And like, okay. And then explaining like, this is how I shoot. This is what we're going to do. This kind of flow of the night. And like, so that takes up time, and then like pause throughout.
Because sometimes they don't even know what they're in for. Like it's helpful to have that information even on your website too, for them to like mentally prepare beforehand, but like even to just be like, hey guys, this is what I'm doing tonight, like this is what we're thinking about, you know, you guys said that you have this this location and you're wearing these two outfits, how we can pair them all together, like really puts me at ease when I know what I'm gonna be brought through as an experience.
Yeah,
for sure. For those photographers that don't have all the poses in their head or like a catalog that they can look through, what's the best approach for that? Because you don't want to, as a photographer, to get through the session and be like, I'm kind of done.
Yeah. Yes. So there's a few practical things that I would do. I would like, first of all, always arrive to the location early and then like scroll through Pinterest and screenshot my favorite poses. So like I have like a mental list, but then also I would take with my camera a photo of my phone. So then, you know, say where they're changing or something, I can like flip through my camera. It looks like I'm flipping through the photos, but I actually am flipping through my inspiration photos. So that is like just a practical thing. But then also, and I know everyone's brain works differently, but my brain remembers like little sayings. So like I will come up with like, I came up with like my top 5 poses. And I was like, if I can remember these 5, I'll be good, because then I can branch off and like we can get more creative. And also sometimes the location like will just fuel different poses and ideas. But like, so I came up with like a top 5. I was like, if I can remember these, I'm good. And then like with veil shots on a wedding day, I'm like, okay, there's 3 veil shots. And then so like I'll start with the one where I bring their faces really close together. And okay, I want you to like gently pull her into you. And I want you guys to enjoy the moment. And I'm just going to take some photos. You're going to forget that I'm here. Like I'll like talk them through like that. Then I'll be like, okay, so I'm going to shoot through the veil. That's one. And I'm like, okay, shoot, there's three poses. Where are the other three? And then it like helps me remember like, okay, now I'm going to put them under it. Perfect. Got that. Take those. Now I'm going to get under it with you. And like, so like coming up with little like sayings like three veil shots, got it, three, even though I don't remember the three, I know there's three, and then like I'll get to it eventually. And then like, okay, five top poses, what are those top five? Like, okay, holding hands, walking, spinning, and like, you know, whatever those are. And so like kind of that helped me a lot, was like creating little, I don't know, sayings.
Yeah, it's like posing and prompts. Like prompts yield emotion, which will kind of already put you in the mood for those poses. Like being able to say like, hey guys, take a moment to like just be truly present with yourselves. Like you've walked me and Katie through that of just like, hey, I'm a fly on the wall. Like this is at the bridge. You're like, I'm a fly on the wall. Just have fun. Even just like dance, do whatever feels natural for you guys. It's like, it just brings you out of the picture and lets them have their moment. And then you have those real responses. I'm curious as to what your philosophy is just as a whole. Like what goes through Justice's mind when she thinks of photography? Like there's obviously a lot that goes into it and you wear so many different hats, but what at the end of the day matters to you?
Okay, this is a very big, very big question. So I would say my approach to photography, or my like philosophy, really stems from just like a love for everyday life. And I would say when I, well, actually, it kind of, it goes in tandem. Like when I started my photography business was also when the Lord was teaching me, like just opening my eyes to like just the beauty of life. Like I, you know, was in like a really rough patch. I had just gone, like just life was crazy. And I was like, honestly, pretty depressed. And so the Lord was like opening my eyes to see like, listen, even though this didn't work out the way you thought it would, like look at all the gifts I've given you. And so really my eyes were open to see like just all of the little everyday gifts that he puts in my life. So like I would take pictures and write down, like I would carry a notebook with me and write down like all the little gifts that I would see. So I would be like on a bus and I would write like old man reading newspaper. Like that's beautiful. That's a gift. Or like light coming through my bedroom window in the morning. Like that is a gift. That's beautiful. Like dew on the morning grass. That's a gift. That's beautiful. And so like my outlook on life was like totally shifted. And just like, I became like, I started to notice all these little things. Cause like, you know, you walk down the street, you're late for work. Like you're just getting your Starbucks. Like you just, you're like one track minded. Like you just, you're focused. But like when you slow down and pause and look around, you're like, oh my gosh, like look at the clouds. They're beautiful. They're moving so fast. Or like, oh, that looks like a rabbit. Or like, and then also like that, oh, that neighbor, like he's sitting on his step. Like that is like beautiful. Like, and so you like, when you pause and are intentional, you like really see all of the beauty of everyday life. So like that, like my eyes were opened to all of that. And then I started my business. So I would say like a huge thing that my business is founded on is like pausing and enjoying those moments. So like that affects like how I shoot. Like I remember when we were doing you and Katie's engagement photos, we were in a like a field and it was golden hour and it was gorgeous. And I think I don't remember what you guys were doing. She probably had her arms around you and like told you guys were looking at each other. But the sun was like hitting her hair. So I think I had like, well, I took like probably 20 photos of her hair. Probably only delivered like two. But like there's like a photo of just her hair and the golden light. And it's like, yes, sir, like the photo is of you two looking at each other. But like also if you zoom in and pay attention, like her hair is like glowing like because of this golden light. So like just it like affects how I shoot and then also like how I crop, like how I edit is huge. But also like, yeah, I'd say that's my approach to life in general, but also to photography. And then I'm able to like walk clients through on a wedding day, like, listen, this is your wedding day. Like you're only going to get married hopefully once. And like, let's enjoy it. And then like after the ceremony, when we start couple portraits, I always am like, guys, you have 5 minutes or however long you need. Like, I want you to go off in this corner. I'm still going to be taking your photos, but I want you to go and enjoy this moment. Like this is your first moment together alone as husband and wife. Like we just did family photos. That was crazy. I know. Go take a breather. And like, and I always tell them like practice your five senses. Like how do you feel in this moment? Like, is the breeze like blowing through your hair? Do you have goosebumps? Or like, do you, how does his hand feel in yours? Is it sweaty? What does it smell like? Does he have a new, does she have new perfume on? Does he have a new cologne? Just walking through the five senses. And then
that's huge.
Uh-huh. And then, because I found like whenever you pause to enjoy the moment, like that memory will become seared in your brain. Like I have memories, like one memory that is seared into my brain. I was in Scotland and it was, I was hiking and like the view was just breathtaking. And I was like, I don't want to forget this. Like, I don't know if I'll ever be here again. I don't want to forget this. And I literally sat down and I was like, went through the five senses. And that moment is literally like seared into my brain. Like if I close my eyes, like I can feel it. It feels like I'm there. And that's because I was just intentional with pausing and enjoying. So I just walk clients through that and I tell them like what I just said and like, this is your wedding day. Like you want to remember this. Like you don't, obviously you want photos to remember it, but you also don't want to experience your memories secondhand. Like I'm going to deliver you photos that are awesome and will tell the story of your day. But more important than that, I want you to be able to remember them like for yourself without the aid of like, without a visual aid. So yeah.
It's like those third person moments, which is what you're capturing, but you want those first person moments to be like extra seared. And that's so cool. I think too, something that I've noticed with your work is that you show often the context of what you put out there. So like in our gallery, you actually took photos of the geese that were flying because we experienced geese in the field and we just talked about it forever. But like, that was so cool to see like, hey, part of our engagement shoot that we just had was that there were geese there. And it wasn't just me and Katie and you. It was like, you know, it was a beautiful sunset. It was the silhouette shots that we took. There was geese and like there was a bridge and a lot of things can fall away, but because of those contact moments and stuff that you've shared in your galleries, which a lot of people sure take photos of, but like including them in your galleries and like seeing you post them on like Instagram is like so cool to see those like more editorial, even like the one that you just posted yesterday of like everyone dancing on like the basketball court was from this weekend, I think, which was so cool. I was like, dang, that's like so fun and not the average wedding photo. I don't know. That was just super special to me that you included geese for whatever reason. But that stuck with me. Explain your relationship to like Instagram then. Is that a marketing tool for you? Is that just a place to share your heart? I'm curious. Everyone has a wildly different take on
this. Yeah. I'd say it's a little bit of both. I don't hate Instagram. I know a lot of photographers are like, I hate Instagram. I don't hate it. I think it's great because I love it because it allows me to be like, share work that I'm proud of. And so I look at my account and I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Like, I'm so proud of what I created. And so like, I have a great relationship with it. And like, I don't care about likes or like real, like, obviously you get frustrated, like if something doesn't perform well, but ultimately it's like, you know, whatever, like, I don't need a million views on this, like, or I don't need a thousand followers. Like, I just need, ultimately, I just need like 30, like, cause that will be my next year. Like, if I have 30 followers, 30 people who are invested in me, like, that's my income for the next year. So like, that's all I need. Like, I don't need thousands. Like, I just need like a handful. And so like, I look at it from that perspective of like, numbers don't really matter. As long as I have my people and people that I can serve, like, that's all that I need. But yeah.
What percentage of or what are your revenue sources or ways that people inquire? Is that mostly through Instagram? Is that mostly through your website? Like some word of mouth that enters through website?
I would say at this point, probably a lot is word of mouth. Like, people are like, yeah, I was a wedding guest at this wedding and I saw you. And now that I, you know, saw you and you saw your work, like I'm booking you for my next wedding. Or like I get people like DMs after a wedding day all the time. People are like, hey, when I'm engaged, like I'm booking you. So like a lot is through like, word of mouth, but then also like people seeing me work and seeing that. I would say, yeah, word of mouth is a huge thing. Like all my inquiries, even if people DM me, I'll tell them, like I'll send them my inquiry link and be like, pops through my website, which I don't know. Some people don't do that. Some people are like, that's how I only do it. But it helps me like stay organized. But anyway, yeah, so all inquiries come through my website, but a good portion is from Instagram, and then word of mouth are probably the two.
Yeah. I mean, is there anything you wish you would change about that? Like, do you want it to be a certain way that you're not seeing, you see, you want to see more organic from Instagram at all? Or do you like where you're at?
I think there's always room for growth.
Yeah.
I'm fine with where I'm at, but yeah. I'd love to also see things grow. Like, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It's a mixture of both, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I see that. Is there any final advice that you would give to a wedding photographer that aspires to be like you or have your processes or your systems, your editing style? What does it look like for someone to achieve what you've achieved in such a short amount of time? Let's be honest. You're awesome.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. That's crazy. Well, I would say start off, like, if you're starting off, like, shoot as much as you can, like, offer to shoot things for free. I shot things for free all the time. Like, I had you guys. I did, like, a model call, and that's where we first connected, actually. I had, like, 5 photo shoots that I wanted to do. And so, like, I posted on my story. I was like, hey, I need people. And I was like, you'll get free photos in exchange for your time. So, yeah, shoot for free. There's no shame in that, like, at all. Second shoot, that's huge. Also, like, play around with your settings. Like, I'm self-taught. Like, no one ever taught me anything. I don't even know, like, maybe I'm not doing things right, but it works. Like,
yeah, exactly. You know? So what does it matter at the end?
Get to know your camera and, yeah, shoot. And then I guess a huge thing is the more you do in camera, the less you have to do editing. So, like, really learn your camera. Like, program your buttons to where, so, like, I can keep my camera here and, like, be switching my ISO, my aperture, my f-stop, and my Kelvin, like, all, like, so adjust your buttons so you can do that. That's really helpful. And yeah, practice. There's no shame in shooting for free. And I would say figure out, like, how you want to get to where you want to be. So, like, if I want to be a wedding photographer, like, what steps do I want to take to do that? If I want to be a senior photographer, like, senior portraits, what do I do to get there? And then, like, kind of strategize. Yeah, strategizing in game plan and, like, also talk to people. Like, I would DM, like, famous people, like, hey, what do you, and they're like, they will respond to you, maybe not always, but they will, and ask people. And yeah, there's no shame in not knowing everything when you start. And also, the people that have been doing it for 10 years also still don't know everything. So it's like, they might look like they know everything, they might say they know everything, but they don't know everything. So
It's true. Everyone can fake until they make it.
Right.
And a lot of people, I mean, just in the corporate world, and I said this multiple times, like, in the corporate world, everyone's just faking until they make it too. They don't know what they're doing. They just put on the facade of knowing a lot of the time.
And that's okay to fake it till you make it. Like, yeah, I do that still.
especially as a creative, like, nothing is roadmapped for you as, like, if you were to become an accountant. Like, it is just your experiences, your expression of which then translates to being art, which is the coolest part. What is your relationship with rest? And we'll end here.
Oh, this is actually, it's funny that you say this because I am learning a lot about this right now. I did not have a great relationship with rest. I would, like, stay up till 2 a.m. editing and then, like, working 3 jobs at one point, and, like, I also am a list person, and I get stressed if my list isn't, like, finished, and if I don't, am not as productive as I was planning on being. And so, like, rest was really difficult for me because I was like, I can't go to bed until I, like, finish everything, or else it's going to drive me insane. And I would get, like, really stressed, and it was just not very healthy. So literally, when I say, like, this is something I'm learning, like, last, like, 2 weeks, like, still also currently, like, this is something huge. But just, like, Sabbath is huge. And basically, that's just, like, taking one day a week to not do anything. Like, I'm not going to be doing emails. I'm not going to be doing laundry. I'm not going to be cleaning up my car. Like, all of that stuff can wait till Monday morning. Like, I'll wake up extra early on Monday to do that. But Sunday, or whenever your day is, like, I am doing something that, things that strictly, like, fuel me, like, that will refill me. So, like, sleeping in, reading a book, maybe visiting a friend, but I'm not going to go grocery shopping, or, like, all of the to-do list things, like, those are not allowed on my day of Sabbath. Like, that, this is, like, where, and, like, I used to think, like, oh, well, if I rest, then, like, it's going to actually put me behind. But, like, it's actually been the opposite. Like, when I rest, like, I'm able to be more productive when Monday comes.
Come on.
Versus if I worked all day Sunday.
Come on.
So, yeah, it's hard. It's so hard. I still am not great at it. Like, this Sunday I was like, wow, I didn't, maybe not rest as much as I should have. And so it's like a learning process. But yeah, that's it's really, really important. And you're actually able to, it will help your productivity.
Absolutely.
Instead of make it less. So, yeah.
Thank you, Justice, for coming on the Silo podcast. I can't thank you enough for being here.
I'm so glad that I got to be here.
Sick. Yeah. Let's go. We did it.